Volare, oh, cantare.
Welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Welcome to Gorgeous Escapes with Sarah Tucker, who's our new travel journalist, who's always travelling around the world. And last time I contacted her, I said, I'm looking for some photographs. And she said, I'll send you them, but I am in Rome or Venice. And I was like, oh, God, come in next week. So here you are.
Hello, hello. Yes, me back again. But I've got a cold, so back to rainy London.
Who hasn't?
Yeah.
So where were the three places you went in Italy?
I started off in Venice, and then I went to Florence, and then I went to Rome. And they were all very, very different. Everyone, that since I've been back, everyone asks me which is the most romantic. And it's a bit like comparing apples with pears. You know, they're completely different size. Like Venice is a village, Florence is the town, and Rome is definitely the city. So you can't really compare them. But from a romantic perspective, well, Venice is very, it's a very intelligent, interesting city. It's a fairy tale. It genuinely is sinking. While we were there, we had phenomenal weather on one day. So beautiful, beautiful, beautiful skies. And on the next day, the tide was very high and St. Marco's Square turned into a lake. And
no.
Yes, and so everybody was wearing their wellies. Everyone was walking over these elevated platforms. And that is happening much more regularly now. So it is one of those cases where at the beginning of every year I get press releases about see this place before it goes. Venice definitely...
Can't they save it from sinking?
That's like a million-dollar question. You've got people like Elton John and Naomi Campbell. They have homes there. And, you know, there are people who've got a serious amount of money now who could certainly invest in restoring Venice. The interesting thing about this particular area is that they could, a bit like the Thames Barrier, they could close off the waters so that literally they're surrounded by a lake rather than a continual flow. Flowing river. But they're very clever. The Venetians have always been very, very clever, and you can see that throughout the history. But they want fresh water coming in, because the problem with being surrounded by a lake is that it gets stagnant. And I think no matter if you go on a day trip or even if you stay in Venice for sort of like 1 or 2 days, as I did, which I strongly recommend, is that in the winter, you know, the smell can be quite overpowering and overpoweringly bad. But
what
in the summer,
smell?
Oh, sort of like, well, seawater. And sort of, and you know, fishy,
like rotting,
rotting, exactly. And also in the winter, it gets foggy, as in pea soup thick fog. But it is, you know, the way that it was built on sort of like marshland, really. It's not built on anything solid. And what they did, they built it. You can learn about it sort of through the history. They built on wood and then on stone, on brick, then on concrete and then marble. But they obviously don't build too high because it would literally sink. And it's not one island. It's loads and loads of little, all connected with different canals. And
oh, so Venice is a group of islands.
It is. And so there's a lot of, when you go there, there is, I think most people go on day trips, which I feel is a mistake. When you go on a day trip, you usually go on something like a pre-organized tour. You will go on exactly the same trip, exactly the same route that every other person will go on. And there's like a stampede. You do get this stampede of tourists which go from A to B and B to C and C to D, and you don't really get to live and breathe the place. And I think that's the beauty of, if you do go to Venice, stay 2 days, no more, no less. It's that sort of place.
Because but it's easy to get lost in Venice, isn't it? It all looks the same.
But that's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
I think that's the wonder of it. Obviously, you've got the wonderful little bridges, and we had, and it's also worthwhile investing in having a one-on-one guide. We had a lady called Edwina, who was a mother who'd got two children who lived there, and she said there's no big supermarkets there, so everyone carries their groceries. They get them on a daily basis. I've got two young children. We've got all the bridges. She said, you know, when the children were very young, I had very strong arms. If anyone tried to mug me, I would have just wiped them out because my muscles were very, very big, lugging sort of big buggies up and down. And,
yeah.
You know, sort of bridges. You don't think about
it's
things
terribly
like that.
Impractical, then.
It's terribly, especially if you're disabled or elderly. They have improved now with things like ramps. The best way to see to see this place. Everybody walks, as I said, it's like a village.
How do you walk from island to island?
Well, again, you've got there's a lot of boats. One of the other ways, best ways to see it, and I would definitely recommend it. They do these group tours where you can see Venice by boat, but try and get an individual one, because I think although it's more expensive, it is worth it. You'll find about all the, you know, the different areas, interesting things like some of the Venetian history is it's fascinating. It's quite dark. Venice was excommunicated 15 times by the Roman Church simply because they wouldn't do as they were told, and it was nothing to do with their king or somebody in power wanting to get married again or anything like that. They just disagreed with what Rome said, and Rome took them back because, you know, the whole thing, the Shakespearean thing, you know, the Merchant of Venice, everyone,
they're very wealthy, yeah.
They're very well, everybody is a merchant in Venice. Mm. They're very, the intelligence that they were before their time then and they are before their time now, you know, even to the extent, you know, the cliche of, you know, the masked balls, which are during carnival time in Venice, the whole concept behind the masks wasn't just to go to a carnival or go to a ball or party. They wore masks because everybody knew everybody else in Venice. It was like, as I said, this great big village. Everyone walked everywhere. You couldn't hide behind anything. And so people wore masks. There wasn't, you know, again, Venice is famous for Casanova. As our guide said, there wasn't just one Casanovas. Everybody was a Casanova and a Casanovette, if you like to put it. But they did it, they were adulterous, but in a very sophisticated way. The whole concept of threesomes even entered into politics, whereby you had a doja who was the sort of like the head guy, the prime minister or the president, if you like, but they were only allowed to be in power for a year. They had always two people following them, so that someone was checking up on the doja while the doja was checking up on someone else, and that person was checking up on the person who was checking up on the doja. So no one could be corrupt. I think what they did is they saw all the corruption that was in the Roman Church and they thought, we're not going to be like that. So they were very savvy, and everybody was a spy. It was famous for everyone spied on everybody else. So if everyone thinks of Venice as very romantic, but it's actually quite edgy, it's intelligent. Do not sit down, if I have any tips, do not sit down and have coffee or hot chocolate in St. Marco's Square. It will cost you about 15 euros, 15, 14, which are equivalent rate now. It's about 13, 14 pounds for a coffee. Forget it. If you stand up and have coffee, it will cost you about 1 euro, 2 euros. Wow. So do what the Venetians do, stand up and drink. And the hot chocolate is, you know, absolutely amazing.
Yes, I'm worried about the prices, because obviously it's famously expensive.
Well, we stayed at a place called the Londra Palace Hotel, which is right on the waterfront. It's extremely central. One thing that I learned about this trip, beyond anything else, is that if you have a good hotel, you have a good concierge. Ask the concierge about the restaurants, which only the Venetians go to, which are small and characterful, and in the back streets, and you will find yourself at hotels that Hollywood would only dream of, where you get only Italians. Well, the first host restaurant we stayed at, or we went to, it was at lunchtime. On the table next to us, there were three generations of one family, the mother looking absolutely beautiful, like a Sophia Loren type, with, you know, gorgeous children, handsome grandfather, and the waiters were characterful and interesting. I said Hollywood couldn't have made it up.
What did you eat there?
I keep thinking of that film Eat, Pray, Love, where Julia Roberts put on, you know, two dress sizes. You know, if you like your pasta, one of the people I went with said she was intolerant to wheat. Well, she ended up at the end of the trip having pasta for lunch and supper. If you're going to have pasta, have it there. It is phenomenal. But the fish is exquisite. It's wonderful. They love their seafood, so anything with clams in, anything with prawns in.
Did you have that black risotto?
Yes, yeah, the squid ink risotto. Yeah. It's very, very popular. But again, it's always good to listen to what the restaurant, because restaurants like this, and the same goes for Florence and Rome, they will always have their specials, and they don't choose them lightly, especially when they have locals in, because if the locals don't like it, they will vocalize it there and then, and they won't pay. So it's always very, very good to go to these restaurants where you're surrounded by tourists. And I said to the concierge, but if all the people who stay stay here, ask for advice. You know, if you send them all to the same restaurant, you're going to be surrounded by, there are lots of different restaurants. So we send them to lots of different places. But it is a very characterful place.
And you can just fly direct to Venice, can't you? You obviously have to travel to get there. I mean, an hour from the airport, but it's quite easy to get to.
I think fly to Venice, it's very easy. Then take the water taxi in, because I think that's incredible.
Very glamorous.
Very, very glamorous, but also start clicking on the photo. Like, there will be photos on the Radio Gorgeous website that I'm going to put on there. But take photos right from the word go, because the journey actually into Venice is as spectacular as when you arrive.
Fabulous. Keep your mind fit. Listen to Radio Gorgeous. Now, the next place you went to, this is everywhere's terribly famous, Firenze, Florence. So what's Florence famous for? It's art.
Not only is Florence famous for its art, it's also famous for its queues. And I think this is why I want to promote this city out of season, because most people go to Florence and they go, and I can understand that with the school holidays during the summer months. Summer months are extremely hot, and you are queuing for places like the Uffizi and Accademia, the galleries, for not just half an hour, but hours, 3-4 hours. It is a long time
to
wait.
It's worse than Disneyland.
It is worse. Well, at least with Disneyland, you have entertainment on the way while you're waiting. With these places, you don't. Mm. And I feel by the time, and I've certainly been in those queues in my younger years, by the time you actually get in the door, you're quite resentful, you're tired, especially if you're with young children or family, they're completely resentful. And it takes a very powerful experience to actually overcome the fact that you've waited and potentially wasted all those hours queuing to get in. Not only once you get in, you can't really see the paintings properly or the sculptures properly. Because it's so packed, and it's very frustrating. If you go in January, as I did, the weather can be glorious. Yes, you can have rain, but usually it's sort of like the last few days in January and the first few days in February. Then after that, it's wonderful again. You go straight in. You see the very best of Italian art at its very best.
In the world, where
it's, you've got nobody in the way. You can see things. Like, unfortunately, in the Uffizi, you cannot take any photographs. So buy one of the guidebooks, buy the postcards. You know, I've got a thing about bookmarks at the moment. Get a postcard rather than a bookmark, because a bookmark is ironically sort of like 50 cents more than silly things like that. But you've got those wonderful images. You know, the rape of the Sabine women, you can see that, or a replica of that in the main square by the Uffizi. But actually in the Accademia, it's the first room that you go into, and it's one of those sculptures that you watch and you look up at and you walk around over and over again. And it brings, to the eyes. It's the one by Caravaggio where you walk in. It's actually designed to be walked around very, very slowly, and you look up at it, and it's three bodies entwined. And actually the artist didn't know what to call it, because he just wanted to show the excellence in art, the fact how the bodies entwined with one another. And it was actually another artist that decided that it should be called Rape of the Sabine Women. Mm-hmm. It's a hypnotic sculpture. You walk through the different rooms, and everybody looks and waits for Leonardo's David. And I must admit, when I saw it, it is stunning. It is amazing. But I remember the last time I saw it, which when I was in my sort of my 20s, nowhere I couldn't get close to it. Now, when if you go in at the right time, you can actually get within touching distance, although I don't suggest you touch it, because everything will go.
So I'm trying to think, when would be good times to go then? I suppose January, February, March.
May, you're starting to get into a busy season again, because a lot of people, you know, when they think of Florence, they think of romance and spring. So May, I think really May, June, July, or September through to October. I think towards the end of October, it will start to get quiet again. But certainly if you're booking to go to any of these places, it's best to go out of season, definitely to avoid the crowds, because then I think you'll have more time for things like climbing the Duomo, as I did. Again, if you're able-bodied, go and see, because it's one of those experiences you think, I think there's something like 414 steps, and it does get narrower as you go up the dome, because obviously it does enclose in on you. But the view, once you get to the top, shop is absolutely phenomenal. It is, you know, I watch a lot of films, and I remember the two films I remember that were part of the time based in Florence. One was A Room with a View, which is so romantic and so wonderful. And again, we had a very central hotel when we were staying there by the architect who actually designed the Duomo himself. And then, all the names will be on the website. The other film I remember was the one called Hannibal, and Hannibal Lecter was walking across the square, which wasn't such a nice film. So I sort of like, I had very mixed opinions how sometimes the media tend to sort of portray cities. But just think of Room with a View, because, and also take your time. This is why I was only in Florence for a couple of days.
I was going to say, how long would you go to Florence for?
I would say 5 days, five, six days, because
it's not too small.
It's not. We were there for 2 days, and I think you can take your time going to like the San Lorenzo Market. Again, that's very, very central, close to the Duomo. They sell all the leather goods, some tats, some nice things. But if you go inside, there's an, like a part of the market was actually, which is undercover, which does all the food. So you can see the fresh pastas being made. You can see the salamis and the cheeses. And that's interesting and fun and funky. Going to the Duomo itself, climbing is worth going to. And also the restaurants. Again, we went into a restaurant, which is, again, full of locals, and met some very nice young Italian men and older men, and so and they chat, and everyone chats, and they give each other wine. It is, again,
that's even just at lunchtime.
Is exactly yeah. It's what Hollywood would like everywhere to be, but it genuinely
is
like that.
Well, it's what we dream of as well, isn't it? You know, British people. You know, they want the Italian lifestyle. You
and
know.
And it works. It's not a cliche. And over the over if you go over the Arno to the Boboli Gardens and the Bardini Gardens, which are smaller and less touristy, it has a completely different energy over the other side of the Arno, and it's much more residential, it's quieter, but it gives a different side to the place. So I would definitely say give it 4 or 5 days.
Well, I must say I love visiting the garden. The older I get, the more I'm into gardens.
Cantare. Let's fly way up to the clouds, away from the maddening crowds.
Follow us on Twitter, radio_gorgeous. Lots of love, darlings. Mwah. Now, the next place you went, how did you get to Rome?
Well, I travel between Venice and Florence and Florence and Rome via train. And again,
Fabulous. First class, second class.
First class. And actually, if you go first class, think it's going to be like it is in the UK, much, much more expensive. No, it's about 10 euros more. It is worth it. It is definitely worth it. The trains are very fast. It takes about 2 hours between Venice and Florence, just under 2 hours between Florence and Rome. They're very efficient. You have drinks and food, snacks. If you choose to travel business or first class, it's very clean. It's very efficient. It's the way to do it. The stations are very nice. The one in Venice is particularly good. The one in Florence is good. The one in Rome is a little bit chaotic, but then you've got a city, so what do you expect? And you have the opportunity to see the, you know, the beautiful Tuscan countryside. And the other side, you know, one of the towns you go through is Bologna, which is a very interesting city, but it's a bit more industrialized, and it's a good contrast. It's a good way to cover the ground.
Such a lovely way to travel, slowly and taking it in.
It is.
It's a lovely thing about trains.
It's very, very good. I highly recommend. We don't do it enough, and I think we don't do it enough is because our own ones in our own country are nowhere near as good. When you're in Rome, you asked me before how many days in Venice, how many days in Florence. In Rome, you can spend months and months there. I would strongly recommend if you're in Rome, 2 weeks.
Oh my God!
If not, okay.
Can we do a weekend?
Well, yes, you can. You can do a weekend. You can touch upon it. I think the beauty of these places is that, and the unfortunate thing about the way, especially the British travel, if you have a time limit, we cram everything in, just like we do into a suitcase. We want to get everything in.
Yeah, we do.
By cramming everything in, we lose the impact of each individual thing that we do or item that we take. It just gets crushed. And I think if you have a short time there, if you have 2 or 3 days there, limit yourself to 2 things a day and have a long lunch because that's part of the experience as well. Literally walking around Rome, even if you do not itinerize anything and decide to go to the Colosseum is definitely one of the things that you should do, especially now because they're renovating it. They've got 25 million euros, which has come from the European Community, which will take about another 10 years to complete. The Colosseum will be phenomenal by the time it's finished. It's one of those places where if you've seen the film Gladiator and how it was shown, obviously they used a lot of technology to recreate it as it was. It will be like that. It will be an incredible thing to probably one of the wonders of the world, without doubt.
It already is, though.
I remember the first time I went to see it, it was a roundabout. It was one of the most glorious roundabouts in the world. But it was a roundabout. You literally drove through it. You had to cross a road to get to it. It was utterly ridiculous.
Isn't that the charm of Rome, that you're just walking along and suddenly you're by a pillar, you know, you're by a giant foot.
I mean it's
very relaxed, whereas in our country it's more like everything's cornered off and, you know, and it's like got signs on it.
I am so pleased they have pedestrianized part of it so that there's some old temples that they've attached like a walkway, so it's all linked now, so you can walk from the temple through to Colosseum how it used to be, and you don't have to cross a busy road. I think that's a good idea. I get what you say about, yes, it's wonderful that you walk to the end of a street and there's a Roman fountain, or there's a Roman pillar right in the middle by a shopping centre. And you think, oh my God, it's another thing, and it's not even on the map. You know, there's sort of like this Roman ruin right in the middle of busy high street. We stayed in a hotel that was just by the Spanish Steps, and this is again the key thing with when you're staying in all these cities, whether it's Venice or Florence or Rome, choose a hotel that is right in the centre, because all of them without exception are good walking cities. Yes, we had to get into a cab, you know, more in Rome than we did. We didn't get into a cab in Florence, and we certainly didn't in Venice, because those cabs are cars. But I think in order to get the scale of Rome is, you've got to go to the Vatican. I went to the Vatican.
Was the Pope on?
The Pope, they love their Pope. They absolutely, they adore him. And as I've just, the irony is I was in Argentina, in Buenos Aires.
Yes, where he comes from.
And they miss him. And they want him back. And they said, you know, Italy, the world actually, is very, very lucky to have him. And the Italians know it. Out of all the popes they've had, they are so enthusiastic about this one. He goes out. He doesn't have his bodyguards when he goes out. He goes out in his little car. He helps the poor, but he doesn't shout about it. He's very aware. He's a pope of the people. I think that's what they call him. What it has done is that you've got this pope when you go around the Vatican and no queues, nothing. Whoa. Absolutely nothing. You cannot take photos. Yeah. There were a few people who did take photos in the Sistine Chapel, and they were marched out and they had their cameras confiscated.
God.
So, but on the way there, you have things like, there's so many beautiful things to see, like the tapestry room, the things about the Egyptian history, where you can see the mummies, the bodies mummified. It is fascinating. But there's an area which is contemporary art, which is just sort of just before you go into seeing the Sistine, and it's got things by Henry Moore, Dali.
I love when that's modern.
Well, yes, but sort of it is relative, isn't it, to Roman? I'm just saying, but I think of it as well. But they've also got, you know, paintings by Francis Bacon, and I mention him in particular because, you know, wonderful, wonderful artist though he is, he does make everybody and everything he paints look terribly, terribly pained and angry, and he's done this painting of one of the popes, and it's awful. It's obviously brilliant, but the pope looks really ill. But it is a wonderful contrast and a wonderful statement, because you've got this ethereal work surrounding you, especially all the works that you've seen before and past, with everything being made to look so beautiful, and then you've got the stark contrast of how someone like Bacon, and to a lesser extent Moore or Dali with his, you know, make things look completely different and perhaps not so attractive, you know, to that sort of eye. It is very worthwhile going to the Vatican.
You went in January. What would you wear?
I would say think like a gypsy, dress in layers. So you can, when it's hot, it can get so very hot. So sort of like, almost like thin
layers. What hot? I mean, people.
Well, sort of like hot as in, you know, we, when we were there, it raised to about sort of like 60, 70 degrees on one morning. It's summer. Mm. It's sort of like, it's a good summer here. Yeah. It can be very, very bright. And then,
so
but it can be very cold.
So you Mac.
Yes, you need sunglasses, Mac, but dress in layers because you want things that you can peel off, and also things you can put on, carry, have a jumper with you, but a light jumper, but take layers. So it's cotton, even if you want to take a thermal vest or something, but thin layers, lots of layers, almost like you would if you're skiing, but not obviously as much, you know, as much.
Also some really good shoes to walk in.
Yes.
Yeah, gotta be comfortable.
Yes. You? And also, you know, there's been a lot of talk about sort of you have to take your wellies when you go to Venice. Well, yes, they sell designer wellies there, and yes, you can buy wellies there. But as I said, they're merchants there. So they have these very trendy plastic bags. Well, they're plastic bags, but they're sort of like welly things that they all sell to you and that you put over your shoes, which will go right up to the knees, which are very good. So you don't need to take your wellies.
And they're not too expensive.
Well, again, if you bargain, it's sort of like it's, you know, it's everything from €5 to €15
now,
to 20
also,
euros.
Who would you go with? Would you go on your own? Would you go with a partner? I mean, you know what I mean? Would you go with your family? Who would you go there with?
All these cities are known for being terribly, terribly romantic. Like, I didn't go with a boyfriend or a lover or a partner. I just went with a group of other girls. And I think the beauty of them, of each of those destinations, is that you essentially, you have a romance with yourself. They're very good destinations, ironically, to go to by yourself and to explore. I think you find out, they're sort of places you find out a lot about yourself as well as about the places that you discover. Because there's, especially with, I think Florence is a very good place if you've been heartbroken. Or sort of like you've recently
you
had some
find
sort of,
the poetic side of your own nature.
I think it's so. Mm. I think I don't think you need to be in love. You just need to appreciate love. And I think with Rome, I think in many ways, to come back to the initial question that people ask me, which is the most romantic place? I'd still say Rome is, although it's big and sprawling, it is it really swallows you up. There's so much to see and do. It's the sort of place that you know you're. If you're with somebody, you know, you want to stop and kiss them if it's on every street corner, because it's that sort of place. The food is phenomenal in Rome. Like when we were there, we went to, again, one restaurant, which was recommended by the concierge. And we were the only English there. And artichokes are in season in January. What they do with artichokes, my imagination, it's sort of like, you know, they boil them, they fry them, they grill them.
I love them fried.
Absolutely. Yeah. And artichokes, I wouldn't give them the time of day here. And you know, but when you're there, eat them, because food doesn't travel well. And I think the one thing that a lot of people tend to think is that, oh, we had phenomenal pasta when we were in Rome. We had phenomenal artichokes when we were in Florence. We had phenomenal clams. And they come back and they go to their local supermarket and they get the pasta and the clams and the artichokes. It doesn't taste the same. No. And it does not taste the same. You have to be in the moment. You have to be in their location.
And you have to be in Italy. Gorgeous Escapes, thank you so much, Sarah, for coming on to Radio Gorgeous. You are a star.
Thank you.
Radio Gorgeous supports women. Women support
no
Radio
my
Gorgeous.
Happy heart sings. Your love has given me wings. Nel blu.
If you'd like to contact us, please email us on info@radiogorgeous or like us on Facebook. Or become part of our community. Just sign up your name on our website and we'll send an e-letter to you a few times a month.